Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Truth Wanted. I am your host, Objectively Dan, and this is the live call-in show that happens every single week, Fridays at 7 p.m. Central Time, where we talk to people about what they believe and why. If you'd like to call in and talk to us, you can do that at 512-991-9242, or you can do it through your computer at tiny.cc/callTW. We love to hear it. This show is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to promotion, positive atheist culture, separation of religion and government. Every week, always have a special guest. This week is no different. Joining me is newest edition, I think, of the ACA's lineup of hosts. It's Cara Griffin. Cara, welcome to Truth Wanted.
Thank you. I am glad to be here. I'm glad with the ACA in general. Glad to be.
Yes. So Cara just joined our lineup on Secular Sexuality, which is another call-in show that we do here at the Atheist Community of Austin. If you haven't seen it, they are live on Thursday nights. So check that out if you haven't already. But Cara, please tell us about yourself. Who are you, Cara?
Yeah, great question. I asked.
Right?
No. Yeah, question. Basically, I am one of the other hosts from the ACA from Secular Sexuality, but I get here. Well, I grew up in a fundamentalist environment. More on that later. Short story is, you know, school learned some new information that led me to question that. Got really into education, went to school for a long time. I'm kind of a professional student and doing some teaching these days. And now that I'm not in grad school anymore, I have time to do actual things like podcasts and talking to people and things that feel a little bit more rewarding than that. So I am pleased to be here.
And you're not only doing work here, you're also doing work with another organization. You're also doing part-time anthropology work too, which is very cool. So tell me about that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So where to begin? Okay. On Secular Sexuality, you might have seen me a couple of times. I started hosting there, and I've talked in a little more detail about some of my background growing up with purity culture and everything like that, with, you know, evangelical religious upbringing and everything. I've talked a little bit about being non-binary and gender non-conforming and how that intersects with or, you know, doesn't play well with a lot of those things within the more conservative.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What? No. They're not inclusive? What? I mean, that doesn't track.
I don't know about that. Or I don't know. That sounds, that doesn't.
Yeah, I'm told I'm confused about that. That must be it. These are the same people that tell me I'm confused about my gender. So I don't know. I must be confused about an awful lot. But you never know. But yeah. So I definitely was excited to get onto Secular Sexuality because, you know, that was kind of the sort of one of the main areas for me that, you know, always didn't sit well with me with our, you know, conservative upbringing. It just, you know, it was apparent from the get-go that, you know, not only was it, you know, not very kind to non-male people in the religion, just, you know, there wasn't, you know, much gender equality going on, but certainly not a good place to be if you were gender non-conforming or LGBTQ plus in any way. And so that was, you know, something that was obviously a intrinsic part of me that did not match with those beliefs. So, you know, I guess for me. So it's been great to be able to go on Secular Sexuality and talk, you know, with other people about those things and kind of work through some of that and discuss the ways that that really does intersect with some of the harmful ways that people might be treated in certain religious contexts.
And so, you're also doing some podcast work with Recovering from Religion too, right?
Yes. Yes. I got into that real heavily during the pandemic. pandemic, actually, they were running a program, which we still are running. I guess I'm kind of running it now, called RFRX on Monday nights, which again, yeah, we started that during COVID as a way for people to come on Zoom, the brand new technology, and, you know, kind of hang out. And we do have kind of a weekly informative, fun, educational get together where we have guest speakers come on and talk about topics that are related to people who might be questioning or having doubts about religion or dealing with issues of trying to recover from things that happened to them as a result of being involved in religion, or just kind of dealing with, you know, how things can be if you leave your religion or are questioning it, and you still have to, you know, be able to get on with other people in your life who maybe right. did not make that change. So yeah, we have that every Monday night at 7. So definitely check us out, recoveringfromreligion.org. And you can add that one to your list of weekly shows. But also, you know, Recovering from Religion is more than that. I know we talk about the ACA all the time, and y'all always talk about us. So
yeah. Pretty much.
Everyone's probably aware, but yeah, it's another resource. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for resource to kind of work through anything or just meet other people who are part of this community.
So, yeah. Yeah, so. Definitely. And they're very cool. We've obviously had lots of different people for Recovering from Religion. So definitely check them out if you haven't already. But let's talk more about you, Carl. I'm very curious because I don't know a whole lot about you. We've just recently met and you just recently become a part of the ACA. So I'm actually excited to figure out some stuff myself. This is like me doing some best. Like sometimes I ask questions, right? And I like know the answer ahead of time because it's like, oh, I know this person already, but this is for guests. I'm curious to know more about you, Carl. I want to know your background. There's two different people that get into the kind of activism work, right? Mm-hmm. There's the post-religious folks who grew up around a community, who grew up around the culture and have to like deconstruct themselves out of it. And then there's people who are never part of that at all and just think the whole thing is just crazy. And I feel like their perspectives are very different on their upbringing and how they view the world, right? So like, what was your perspective growing up? How did you view the world and yourself in it? Were you a child of God? Was God like leading your path? Were you part of a faith community? Like, tell me more about that.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely part of the former group that grew up in all of the religion. We were evangelical Protestant Christians. We use the term now fundamentalist. Well, the people who are in that church don't usually use that term, but now we would say fundamentalist. We used the homeschool curriculum from the IBLP, the Institute in Basic Life Principles, that was from Bill Gothard, who some people may have heard from, arguably a cult leader, was also, you know, later disgraced and kicked out of his own organization for it. Wait for it. Can you guess what it was for? Yes.
So I think, let's see. I think he converted to Islam.
Nope. That wasn't it.
I'm just kidding. Obviously it's sexual misconduct. I mean, it's always sexual misconduct.
But, it's always sexual misconduct. Yes. Yeah. You know, one of those, he doth protest too much kind of things. You know, you spent your entire career telling women that they're stumbling blocks for men and that, you know, they need to cover themselves better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the problem is going to be. Yeah. So it was that. And, you know, for people who are not familiar with that, it's pretty an extreme organization in terms of, you know, some of the teachings that they put out. We talked a little bit briefly about it on one of the secular sexuality episodes recently, talking about bad sex education, because he got mixed up in that too. I mean, and I have some of the manuals that we went to, because they would have these seminars that you're like required to go to all the time. This is the same organization that that show was about on TLC, the Duggars.
Right.
Yeah. They're into this stuff.
Which is a whole other can of worms that if you're not familiar with the Duggars, we literally don't have time to go into. But you probably, most people who watch this probably have, right? They're very popular family who was on TLC for having like 14 kids and who some members of the family have recently even discovered that they've also been in trouble for sexual misconduct. So it's
shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I would argue, as I have argued before, that, you know, that is related to the teachings that come out of these kind of extremist groups, where they're teaching things literally like, you know, women's job is to cover themselves modestly and be demure and submissive, and also it's their fault if they tempt any men to sin, and I'm not making this up, also teaches that if there is an instance of, can I say it out loud or do I need to say essay?
Essay would probably be good. I think people know.
Okay. If there is an instance of any kind of that happening, that, you know, it's important, you know, for the victim to also think through how they may have contributed and what they did to potentially defraud or tempt the aggressor, that kind of stuff. You know, teaching the passages of the Bible that say, you know, you should marry the person who assaulted you, that kind of thing. So it is quite extreme. Also there's like some silly stuff to it too. Just, you know, it's young earth creationism and all that. And I'm going to tell on myself here and say, even though I, you know, always thought, you know, this stuff was kind of silly and weird and it did not agree with me at all. You know, I grew up hearing it so much, even after I started deconstructing later in life when I was in college, I didn't even realize the extent of what I had absorbed from some of these teachings. And it's embarrassing to admit this, but it wasn't until I was a graduate student and a teaching assistant in a forensic anthropology course that I realized that men and women actually have the same number of ribs.
Yes. For those who aren't familiar with what Kara's talking about, in the book of Genesis, in I think it's the first chapter, it's not the first, it's the second one, but there's two different stories in there. But the story goes that Eve was created from the rib of Adam, right? That's like the origin there. And there has been a myth amongst particularly fundamentalist circles that men have less ribs than women because of this, which is not true. You can just pop open any human body, and that's gonna be, I mean, I guess not every human body, right? There's gonna be some exceptions, but like most of them are pretty consistent on this fact.
Most people do have a consistent number of ribs and not an uneven number. Like, you know, because the teaching was, you know, God took one of Adam's ribs and, you know, turned Eve into that. And of course, that would mean that he would have had more ribs on one side than the other.
Yeah. I don't know how that works, but.
They not only taught that as if it was literal, but one of the reasons that I didn't even, you know, think to myself, oh, I need to get rid of this silly assumption, was that it was the way it was always presented to me was, you know, during times like, you know, our science class at our, you know, conservative Christian church school, we would learn it as the evidence in favor of creationism, and God wasn't even brought up as a contested claim. The statement would be something like, you know, well, and, you know, one of the other ways that we know that the story of Genesis is true is because men have one less rib than women.
I mean, like, I was around that growing up. I definitely knew people that were like that. But I actually have two parents who work in the field of medicine, right? So, like, they believed in evolution, and they, like, had a pretty good, obviously, a better understanding of biology than I do, right? Just because of their work. But that kind of stuff, the young earth creation stuff, was always around me, but it was never a part of my name. But it's interesting how, such as yourself, it's so crucial to that belief for a lot of Christians. It's like, you have to believe this part of the Bible to be true, or else the whole thing falls apart. And in some instances, I agree with that, right?
It does kind of fall apart.
But, you know, there's obviously people who have argued one way or the other, right? Whether or not you do need a literal interpretation of the Bible. But that's for theologians and believing Christians to debate, not for the rest of us, right?
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter to me either way. Yeah. I had other friends who went to, you know, Catholic school or something, and they were learning evolution in science class, whereas, you know, we were over here reading Of Pandas and People in our, you know, pretending to be biology class.
Well, that's a deep cut. So you're growing up in this culture. You have these beliefs instilled upon you. Obviously, it sounds like faith was a big part of your life. If you're able to like parrot all of this to me, even now, today, right? Like it's probably been so ingrained in you. But now, again, you're working like part-time as an anthropologist, which I've mentioned before, I think is like the most atheist science you could possibly get into, right? Like, because it really just covers all the ground. So like, what happened there? Obviously, there's some sort of change. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, it all of the, you know, kind of the fundamentalist beliefs never really set well with me. I never really felt, you know, really accepted into it. It was more like, well, this is true and you better believe it and I don't care if you like it kind of thing and you're probably going to hell. And so it was always that, you know, you're basically bullied into, you know, going to church and believing all of it because, well, you know, you don't have a choice. But, you know, surprise, kids grow up into adults. Yeah. And so if that was the only basis that you were making them be a Christian on, that does eventually fall apart, especially if they, you know, pursue higher education, which is probably the reason that, you know, we were warned repeatedly that, you know, you better watch out if you go to college. Those liberal professors are going to, you know, teach you about evolution and sex. And, you know, here I am now on the internet talking to people about evolution, sex.
Yeah.
So
you are, I don't know that I guess they were right in that.
They're
2-0 for that, I'd say, right? Yeah. They're right where their belief falls apart if you don't believe that. And also, like, you will become this thing. Like, you did become that thing. So
yeah, I did. Know? It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, one of the only ones they got right.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah. So I did. I went to college and, you know, I loved learning. I was always a pretty big nerd. I was a pretty awkward nerd. Like, we all had an awkward phase, but like, I'm probably still in mine. So sorry. But I was a super big nerd and was just taking classes, you know, in every subject because I was just so excited to be at college and learn things. It was all great and wonderful. And I wound up in an archaeology class because I thought it was going to be like Indiana Jones. And I love Indiana Jones. Like, my friends know this is my jam. So, you know, there's no way I was going to go through college and not take an archaeology class. So I did. And it was not like Indiana Jones. It turns out Indiana Jones is a very bad archaeologist. That is not a good example.
He ends up destroying a lot of like native artifacts, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not too good at that. Also, like, is involved with a lot of Nazis. I don't know how that works. I don't know why the Nazis are as interested. I guess it's more the artifact and he just kind of gets mixed up, but it's weird.
Yeah. Like, I approve of his, you know, opposing Nazis, but it does seem like he's mixed up with Nazis an awful lot.
What's up with that? I don't know. That just came to my mind right now. Obviously, I don't think Indiana Jones is a Nazi. He's a fictional character. It doesn't matter either way, but that is weird that Nazis, it happened more than once.
Right. You know? Right. I don't know a lot of people that, you know, have that many encounters. Now, granted, it's set during Nazi times, but
it's true.
That was a very, that was a very educated, you know, estimate of the time frame as well. Nazi times. Mm-hmm. It was the 1930s.
That's what historians use, I believe. Nazi times.
Nazi times. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yes. My friends, the academics, definitely describe things in these vague terms. It's
totally which legit. Is interesting. Well, okay, this is a total side tangent, but I will say the Nazis were doing a lot of weird stuff in archaeology. And that's for another episode, though. Maybe we can get into that. But this is more about you, Carl. I want to keep this conversation focused. Before I do that, though, I will say we have open lines right now, folks. It's about to be the time where we usually take calls. So if you want to talk to us, we have open lines. We want to talk to you. Please call that number. It's 512-991-9242 or visit tiny.cc/calltw online if you want to talk to us there. And we're ready to talk to you guys. But anyway, back to you, Carl. You're becoming educated, right? That's where we're at in your story. You're becoming educated. So what's that like? You're kind of questioning some things. Maybe you're having conversations with people. I imagine your family's not taking it too well. I don't know. Tell me about that.
Yeah. And sidebar real quick, have me back for the Nazi archaeology episode because that absolutely was a thing.
I'll keep that in mind.
Archaeology. But yes, I was going to school and taking classes and everything. And, you know, my family was warning me. And literally, I had conversations with family members saying things such as, well, you know, sometimes in order to pass a class, your professors will make you claim to believe things that you know to be false, especially science professors. And in order to pass the class, they'll make you write down an essay. It's like they're quoting the plot from that movie. Yeah, I don't remember the name of it because I didn't watch, you know, the one I mean.
Yeah, you're talking about God's Not Dead.
God's Not Dead. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that one. Yeah. And they're describing, you know, your professors are going to force you to write out these things that are essentially, you know, renouncing your beliefs in, you know, young earth creationism and, you know, men and women having different number of ribs and stuff. But so what you have to do is if you do have to do that to pass a class, you know, it's okay, but you need to just write a disclaimer at the bottom of your essay with an asterisk saying, these are not my true beliefs. You know, I believe in Jesus and God and all that. I did not do that part, but I did take the classes where we learned about those things. And, you know, kind of where all sort of fundamentalist teaching backfired was that, you know, if you bring up kids so sheltered and so lacking in education and knowledge, you know, when they do encounter that information, it's going to be kind of overwhelming. They're going to feel tricked and like you lied to them because you did. So I'm sitting in the archaeology class and, you know, being a super nerd as I am and like totally sucking up to the professor and like coming up after class to ask questions and stuff. And I'm like, I noticed on page 257 of the book, it said the following. And, you know, so she's like, hey, this is great. You're interested in the class. You know, will you help me, you know, carry the visual aids back and forth from the lab, you know, sometimes before class? And I'm like, sure. And, you know, I'm like walking down the hallway with these, you know, boxes of, you know, molds of Neanderthal skulls and things. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. These are actual things. We always learned that, you know, evolution didn't make sense because no one had ever found the missing links. And I've got a box full of them right here. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, we start reading more and more and I'm like, wait a minute, these are people who were not only older than 6,000 years old, you know, we're looking at, you know, more than 100,000 years old and they're not even, you know, Homo sapiens sapiens.
Oh, but Kara, don't you know, those aren't people, right? Those are just monkeys and apes that the anthropologists want you to think were people, you know.
Yeah.
Trickery, right?
Yeah, that must be it because those apes, you know, look a lot similar to people.
Yeah.
And it turns out DNA is also a thing that we have now.
Well, which, there is that.
Yeah.
Can't help you there. Don't know what to say about that. But, yeah. So
sidebar.
I'm
winning at Neanderthal on 23andMe among my friends and close relatives.
Winning at Neanderthal.
Yeah. That's the way it describes it on there. It's like you're number one. Really?
Wait, what does that mean? Does that mean you have more Neanderthal parts of your DNA than other people?
Yes, more than I think 82% of users or 84%, something like that.
Okay, well, whatever they got to do to market their product, I guess that's how you do it. But anyway, so you're experiencing the cognitive disc firsthand. You're looking at the flask, you're looking at all the stuff, and I assume at some point you could say that you don't believe in it, right?
Yes. And actually, it took me quite a long time to say that out loud. Now, I hadn't liked it or agreed with it for my entire life. But, you know, once I received more education, I found out also that it also was not true as far as I could tell or as far as we had any reason to believe. But it actually took me several years longer to actually say that out loud because, you know, one of the bits of indoctrination that we got was that, you know, you can go to hell for that. You know, this is one of those sort of unforgivable things.
For some places, and maybe this is how you were, it's like even just pressing doubt is a sin, right?
Right. So, yeah. And even though I intellectually did not think it was true at all, I still had that kind of just unexpected, unwelcome fear response if I was about to say that I don't believe, I would even say that out loud. I was like, I know this doesn't make sense, but I feel afraid to say that out loud, even though it really is what I think.
Right.
That lingering fear of hell, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And that's something we hear from a lot of people at recovering from religion as well. So if anyone else is having that, it's not you. you. You're not broken. It's the indoctrination. They trained your body to physically react that way.
It really is. Like when I was coming out and figuring out, oh, there's people who have never believed in this their whole life and they don't have feelings of guilt or shame at all in saying that they don't believe. Like that was a game changer for me because all the doubts I had, I interpreted through the lens of guilt and shame, right? Because I wasn't as believing as hard as my compatriots. So there must be something wrong with me. I must have a sinful heart. I must, you know, have something that's going on. But really, it's just, no, I'm just a normal human being who is questioning the claims that are being made here that haven't demonstrated themselves to be true in any, you know, legitimate respect, at least from our perspective, right? So I'm glad that you talked about your story, but I hope other people can talk about their stories too and call into the show and talk to us because that's what we want to hear from you. And obviously all the other kinds of stuff that we talk about here on Wanted, whether it's, you know, reptilians or Bigfoot or whatever, you know, like we'll talk to those people too. Like we want to get it all in. But yeah, I'm a big proponent of dismantling the institutions that cause indoctrination for children who believe that they're going to go to hell for literally just saying, I'm not sure about this idea. Because, like, that's a thing. And it's not good, IMO. Not good. Not good. So,
yeah, not good. I agree with you on that.
But here we are making call-in shows and talking about it. So, that's what we're going to keep doing. So, we should talk to some people now, actually, since we got some calls in. But before we do that, Carl, we have to thank the patron of the week. Every single week, we always give special shout out to somebody on Patreon. I, of course, want to thank everybody that donates on that Patreon. Just a reminder, myself, Cara, and others are volunteers for this organization, as are most of the people that you see. Pretty much all the hosts, actually every single host that's on camera is a volunteer. So this money helps the Atheist Community of Austin do what it does best. So thank you to everybody who chooses to donate. But of course, we're going to give a special shout out right now. This week's patron of the week is going to be Don Nelson. Thank you so much, Don Nelson, for donating. And once again, thank you to everybody who decides to donate. You guys. Nice rock. With our shout out done, you ready to talk to some people?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, cool. Let's do it. I think the name here is Mace Dog. Please correct me if I'm wrong. This is Mace Dog calling in from Kentucky. Mace Dog, how are you doing?
How you doing? I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good, good. So I see that you want to talk to us about people who claim to talk to ghosts on the radios. And I'm not sure what you mean. Tell me about that.
Well, do you see like YouTubers like claim like for, well, I don't want to say their names, but do you hear like YouTubers claim that they talk to like a dead souls who like a person who have died through like radios and like they claim, but I don't believe it, but they claim that they do.
Now listen, Mace Dog, I'll have you know, I pride myself from knowing about the weirdest, most obscure stuff out there. But I have to admit, this is new to me. I don't know about people who talk to the dead through radios. Maybe I saw that in like a movie once, but I didn't know like that was an active thing. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm sorry for interrupting you if I did, but
of course,
have you guys, I don't know if I want to bring the YouTubers up because...
You don't have to say any
am
names.
Am I allowed to do that or no?
You know, if you can avoid it, I would say go ahead and avoid it. But like, definitely, if you have like an example of a situation, can you at least describe what they're doing?
Yeah, they have a laptop, and they're actually able to mimic like a voice. Like they're actually able to like voice levels. Like I don't know. It's confusing because I watch like I'm on YouTube a lot, and I watch like these YouTubers. They have these like orbs, spiritual things on the ceilings. Like I don't know. It's weird. Like they like this one YouTuber. He's talked to like dead celebrities. Like I don't know. Like people like Ted Bundy. People like serial. He's talked to a lot like serial killers who have died. Celebrities. Just people who have died that have been in news. And I just I don't know. Like I feel like that they're doing like they're dishonoring. I feel like they're lying about that when they're trying. I feel like they're trying to get people's attention and people to believe that.
Absolutely.
Stuff that might not be the case.
Absolutely. Mace Dog, I don't know your feelings on it. You sound like you're kind of convinced. Maybe you're a little bit conflicted, but let me tell you, I'm 100% convinced that they're lying. Okay. I have no doubts in my mind. Here's the reason why. Psychic phenomenon is nothing new. It's literally as old as the Bible and it's older than that. right? People have been saying that they've been able to contact the dead for as long as like human culture has been a thing. And it's never been proven in any reliable circumstances whatsoever, right? And people saying, oh, but this person talked to my grandma when I went to this theater show one time. Like that's not good evidence, right? That's not how we should examine this kind of phenomenon. And it's very interesting if they're talking about communicating through radio waves or other things, because that means that they have specific methods in which they do it. And if they have specific methods in which they do it, then that means we can observe those methods and see what's true and what's not true. I remember this being a thing whenever Jay Station was a YouTuber, and I'm just name dropping here because this is a thing that happened, right? And this is like in the news. His girlfriend allegedly died, right? That was the story. And then like they claimed to do a summoning of his girlfriend, like literally like 24 hours after those news drops. And of course it was found out his girlfriend wasn't dead, right? He was just getting attention, right? And that's what they're all doing. And I know it's like, oh, but you haven't explicitly seen evidence one way or the other. You don't have to. You really don't. You just have to establish, okay, what would be the possible method for them doing that? And can they demonstrate that? Because if there is a method and it's accessible to them and it can be observed, obviously it can be if they're putting it on YouTube, then you know, something is up there, right? But anyway, go ahead, Mace Dog. You sound like you had something you want to say to that.
Well, you know what? You know what's strange about that too? I mean, I didn't put religion as my question. See, because, well, I'm more of an agnostic atheist, even though those are two things. Like, I don't believe in God, and I don't believe in souls, but, like, I don't know. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I have doubt, but I don't... Yeah. I don't know. Like, should I have doubt for the atheist part, or should I have doubt for the agnostic part?
All right, Cara, I feel like I'm talking so much in this conversation here, but I am interested in this. Maybe like break it down for me, right? Like what doubts do you have that makes you think, well, maybe there's like an afterlife or some other stuff? Like tell me your reasons there.
Well, that example, can I give you one example from this one video that I was watching, but I exit out of it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you can describe the example, I'd love to hear it.
Well, do you know Brian Petito and Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie? My bad, I mixed them up. Duh.
I think that name sounds familiar, but you'll have to be more specific. I don't know.
Well, this guy was I guess the person who was specifically talking to the soul. I guess he was saying, basically he was saying he was talking to Gabby Petito, which is probably not the truth. And when I guess Brian Laundrie, I guess, killed her and stuff, he shot himself in the head. And I don't know what month this was. I mean, I don't know. I think Gabby Petito died in, I think, January or March, maybe. I don't know. But I think one of the souls, like the radio, the guy asked the question, is Brian Laundrie dead? And it's and you know what the radio said?
I'm assuming he said yes. Okay. And you're saying, and I'm not familiar with this story. I thought I wasn't, but and you're saying it wasn't public knowledge at the time that this person was dead?
No, not the person that was talking to the soul, the Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. It was all over the news.
Well, I guess I'm confused. So it was all over the news that this person, sorry, that you mentioned a lot of names here. I'm trying to keep track of your story. There's a YouTuber who said they were contacting these people, and they asked them if they were dead, and they said yes, allegedly.
No, the YouTuber asked one of the person if he was dead, because that Brian Laundrie, he killed Gabby Petito.
Okay.
And so the radio said that yes, he was dead.
But it wasn't, was it known that he was dead at the time? That's what I'm wondering.
No, and that's the thing. Like he was on the run. They didn't know if he was dead or not.
Okay, that explains it a bit more. So it's a missing person's case, is what it was.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's a missing person's case, and this YouTuber is talking to this radio or whatever's going on, and allegedly the radio said that this person was dead. That's the story, right?
Yes, sir. And I tell you what, I don't believe it, but he is dead.
Okay, well, I've been talking for a bit now. I'm gonna let Cara talk, and then we can continue this conversation. Go ahead, Cara.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, yeah, thank you. I'm glad we got that. Yeah, I want to talk more to your question, Mace Dog. Yeah, I think we've kind of gotten to the bottom of it. So what I'm understanding is that, you know, after seeing this show, you noticed that this person who was claiming to talk to dead people on the radio asked a question and got the correct answer. And so that made you wonder, well, is there something to this? Since he got the correct answer. And I can see why, you know, that is meant to be convincing. That is the gimmick, I would say. The reason, I'll tell you the reason that I would not be convinced by that is that this is a tactic that is used a lot of times by people who are claiming to be psychics or mediums, is that they will give correct answers to things. They'll guess things that they're very likely to be right about. So this was a yes or no question, right? Is this person dead? Yes or no? We know that this person is missing. They've been involved in something. Chances are they may be dead. So they have at least a 50-50 chance of getting this right. Mm-hmm. And so he said yes and was right. Well, anyone could have guessed yes and got it right. It's not like he guessed his social security number or something like that, which also you'd have gotten that on the internet. But if they had, on the other hand, guessed wrong and said, no, he's not dead, I bet you anything next week that person would be back on radio saying, well, at the time that I answered the question, he wasn't dead yet, but he is now. And I know that because now my ghost friend on the radio has corrected me and given me more information. And then he's going to make another guess. And if he's wrong, it doesn't really impress anybody. Yeah.
Yep.
So a lot of times they will go out on a limb and make these guesses because if they're right, it's amazing to people. Oh my goodness, they got it right. You know, they must be speaking to the dead or whatever. But if they get it wrong, oh, it's no big deal. They just explain it away.
Yep. And another thing too is it sounds like that this is a person that was publicly in the news and there was probably speculation as to their whereabouts and whether or not they were alive. Right. And so, I mean, the sad fact is, I don't know the exact statistics, but plenty of missing persons end up staying missing or they are unfortunately dead. And that's just the reality for a lot of missing persons. So it may not even be a 50-50, right? It's probably going to be even more likely that one of those outcomes is either they stay missing or that they've passed away, right? Especially after a certain period of time as passed too, right? Like I'm sure the likelihood of them being dead is going to be more likely the longer that they stay missed, right? So by the time this person is probably talking about this, it's probably accepted amongst people, even if it's not officially called yet, that this person, so that's, it's just a numbers game, right? So you can see how psychics and these people, they use this to their advantage, right? And they use human intuition against them, as Cara was saying, by talking about things that seem like they're really good guesses, but if you really stop to think about it, it's actually not as impressive as you might think.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you guys are 100% right on what you're saying. I mean, because that does sound true. It really does.
Yeah. And I would ask too, you know, if this person is claiming to have this ability to learn information like that from the dead or from the other world or dimension or whatever it is, you know, why is it that they can't ever get any really useful information that we don't get from any other source? Why don't they have the winning lottery numbers or the address to the place where, you know, the missing person is being held, you know, or something like that, that wouldn't otherwise be available. It seems like we never get that information.
Yep. Mace Dog, I haven't seen the video you're talking about, but I guarantee they didn't tell you where that person was. They probably didn't say how they died, or if they did, they were very vague about it. You know, critical details that would help with any investigation, right? If you're on a police force and you know that there's a psychic that's they literally made a TV show about it, right? Like you're gonna hire that person because you're gonna find all the missing people, but it never turns out to be the case because it's always theater, right? It's always a show, it's a performance, it's never actually tangible.
Sorry about that. Go ahead,
Mace Dog.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you. My bad. But actually, can you repeat the last thing what you said about they probably don't know, like what you just said? Like you said something about not knowing if the person's dead or not, because Brian Laundrie actually is dead. It was all over the news. He shot himself in the head.
Well, the point I was just making, right, is that if, let's say, you have access to a person who has died, right, and you're talking to that person, the first thing you can demonstrably prove that you're actually talking to this person, you know what you're talking about, is you can talk about exactly how this person died, what address address they're at, where they were going, who they were talking to that day, and you should be able to follow up on that and be able to demonstrate, okay, this is true, this is true, this is true. Psychics will never do that. They never have, and they never will. And if they do, they have always been shown to be right, because how useful would that be in an investigation if you could just talk to somebody and figure out, okay, we can find where this missing person is and get all the details, right? But it doesn't happen. It hasn't shown to be reliable. There's actually been real life police forces that have had psychics as contacts, by the way, and have tried this, and it doesn't work.
It never works. There are psychics that claim things like, oh, I worked for a police department to help solve mysteries. Go double check that information with the police department and you're going to hear a different story about how...
Yeah, they may give unsolicited advice, right? Like that's often how it is. But does that make sense, Mace Dog?
Yeah, it does. And it's kind of like, and also isn't it kind of like a false belief? Like, aren't they lying about something? Isn't lying like a false belief thing? Like, aren't they like lying when they're doing that stuff?
It's complicated. There are some people who definitely think that they have real powers, right? And definitely think that they're actually helping people. So I have to assume that there's a portion of that can be, right? Like, well, look, delusion is a thing, right? I mean, how many Christians say that they can talk to God and prophesize and do that too, right?
A lot.
So like, and who are sincere, and many who are sincere about it, I would argue. I definitely knew people in my community who are very sincere Christians who said that they received some kind of message from God. I mean, even I've interpreted things as signs from God before. You know, I've never actually talked to the guy, but, you know, I interpreted it that way, right? Yeah. So there's definitely a portion that are like that. But 100%, as cynical as it sounds and as unbelievable as it sounds, there are people who are absolutely just in it for the money, absolutely do not care. And the reason I know that is because there's also testimonials from people who said they were psychics for a while, or said that they've done these tricks for a while, and admitted that it was, you know, obviously it's not as common because there are people who still want to keep the con up, right? But it is there. So it goes both ways.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And not the religion thing. I think these guys are Christians too, because, I mean, they do have a lot of... I'm not trying to bring them down on their religion or anything. Like all I ask is that you don't lie about something that's really sad and depressing about a person dying, because that's too much.
I agree. And it's weird because the Old Testament forbids divination. So you're not even supposed to be doing that, along with witchcraft and other things. Divination.
What did you say it was called? The Old Testament?
Mm-hmm, the Old Testament of the Bible. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Mace Dog, we do have some other people that we need to talk to, but I hope that we were able to clear things up for you. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But hey, look, you can call in next week. Call in some other time, and we'd love to talk to you more. Okay?
Can you tell me your names? Because I know Karina.
Yeah. That's Kara, and I'm objectively Dan, and this is Truth Wanted.
Awesome. I see your videos all the time, and I love them.
I appreciate that. That's really kind of you. Thanks, Mace Dog, and thank you for calling in too. If you sounds like there's some other topics we could definitely talk about, so I'd appreciate if you call in next time, and we'll talk to you some more then. Okay, but until then, thanks again for the call. That was interesting. What did you think of that, Kara?
Yeah, that was fun. That was an interesting call. I'm glad we got to talk about that, because, you know, they brought up some good points about, you know, being an agnostic atheist and what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, can you be one and not the other? And
right. We didn't even get into that.
We didn't. But
isn't it interesting how little bits of evidence, of anecdotal evidence that you see can just convince you and be stuck in. I mean, it's the same thing for me, right? Like, I used to think maybe ghosts were low key real because of like the stuff I saw on like Ghost Hunters stuff.
It's convincing, especially if you've kind of been taught this model of thinking in which if you can't explain something, then that must mean it's supernatural rather than just that something happened that I don't know about. So it's very easy to then jump to that conclusion all the time that, well, it must be ghosts. What else could it be?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
When in fact, you know, we should get a little more comfortable just not knowing things sometimes.
Yeah, human beings can be very susceptible to these things.
Absolutely.
Takes a lot of training and like education to like really get that out of you, right?
It
like,
does. And to be fair, a lot of the people who are good at doing things, like, you know, pretending to be a psychic or a medium, they're using psychology against people. They know the cognitive biases that we have, and they know how to exploit them in order to convince people of things that are not true. Like, I really love the late James Randi Randy used to, you know, do a lot of takedowns of things like that. He used to be a magician and then, you know, basically turned into a critical thinker and he may have always been a critical thinker, but turned mm-hmm. into kind of a promoter of critical thinking and would demonstrate all of the tips and tricks that people can use to fool people and convince your brain, you know, that you're seeing something you're not.
For sure.
Yeah. It's not stupid if you get tricked by it. It's been taken advantage of, you know, some just natural human tendencies in the way our brains work.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially people who are like super dedicated to the con, right? Like that's what makes it even more convincing. It's like, oh, you've made a whole career off this. How could you be wrong? Right.
Yeah. Why would you possibly do that?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But we have to show you guys a quick promo real quick that talks about some of the other shows that are happening here at the ACA, including Secular Sexuality. So check this out.
So, and in that moment, I was so disillusioned. I was just like, you can never have faith in other human beings, you know?
You're born alone, you die alone. I hear it.
Oh, yeah.
I had a breakup in my 20s. I understand what that feels like.
It's in order interesting. To pass your exams, you have to study Quran anyway and memorize parts of it, regardless of your own personal faith.
So no such thing as a separation of religion and government in Egypt, hey?
Hey, did you hear Pope Francis? He said affirming things about the queer community. My thoughts are just, well, congratulations. Like thanks for finally getting there.
You could convert tens of thousands of people right now. Ask God, intelligent designer God to give you the magic words to convince us that God exists. And you'll get straight tickets, 72 virgins. You're ready to go. Give it. What do you got?
That's not love. That's manipulation. It's fear-mongering. It's vile. It's disgusting. And the book that you're pointing to advocates for slavery, genocide, misogyny, all of these things. And you come up, well, it's just love. It's just context. Go f*** yourself.
Bastards.
These people, I tried to be as supportive as I could for them. And now... Johnny and Ben, who hosted Talk Heathen earlier today, so if you haven't seen it, I was going to say go watch it.
We were being kind.
These guys, they just walked in with pizza and eye patches.
You know what?
You too.
And we're back to the show, and I just want to give a very quick announcement. So those of you who got to see me on the Bat Cruise last weekend and also come to the ACA Library, thank you guys so much for doing that. It was really cool to meet people. Shout out to Caitlin, who brought the sandwiches, and I ate one, and I forgot that they weren't vegan, but I was drinking, and I didn't care at the moment. So that was a moment, but thank you for that. And it was a good time getting to talk to people and also meet people, and this is the first time I've gone to an ACA Bat Cruise where people have said, hey, Truth Wanted is my favorite show, which is very cool. I also had people who are like, I know who you are, but I've never watched your show. And that's fine, too. So anyway, we are doing live event stuff again. And there's one that I want to plug that's going to feature me this time. So September 25th is going to be a Sunday. And it's also the days where we shoot Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience. And I am going to be hosting Talk Heathen that day with a surprise guest that I will not be mentioning, but I am excited about. So you should definitely come to that if you haven't already. If you want to look up the address, we're of course in Austin, Texas, but go to our website. It's atheist-community.org for all the news and information. We are likely going to be trying to doing a broadcast on the last Sunday of every month, and we are in talks. We haven't determined a date for Truth Wanted yet to be in studio, but we're planning on doing that too. So I'll let you guys know, or one of the other hosts will let you guys know when we do that, but I'd like to start doing that too, because obviously I'm much more frequent on Truth Wanted, and then you guys can talk to me more. But if you want to meet me, I will be coming back to the library on September 25th. So mark that on your calendars if you haven't already. And Kara is going to make their way down sometime soon, right, Kara?
Yes, right? Absolutely. Yes. I was down there a few weeks ago. I wasn't on one of the shows, but I was down there for immoral support. But yeah, I will definitely be there again in the not too distant future. So watch out.
Cool. So if you're interested in the live stuff, definitely come down. We'd love to see you. But anyway, we got some more calls that we need to talk to. So let's talk to some more callers here. This will be a fun one. I think we got Susie calling in from Florida. Susie, I already see in the call description, Hitler is mentioned. So I'm already nervous about what we're talking about here, but I'm ready to talk to
Susie. Please tell me it's Nazi archaeology. Please tell me it's Nazi archaeology.
Yeah, what you got for us?
No. I just caught a few minutes after the show started, and I heard you talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark movie. And I studied Buddhism for like 5 years, and I know that the Nazi symbol is seen in Hindu and Buddhism artwork and fabrics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And rumors of Hitler actually having gone to Tibet. So I'm wanting to know, did he go to Tibet and see that symbol and steal it? And then now Hindus and Buddhists have to defend the actual meaning of their symbol, which, if I remember correctly, it means like unbroken love or something, which is not mm-hmm. what Hitler meant by it. Mm-hmm. So if you could help me with that, that would be great.
Oh boy, this is the episode where I get to talk about Hitler. Wow. I don't know how in-depth we've talked about Hitler. Hitler was a weird guy. For a guy that's been studied for history as much as he have, there's still a lot of interesting things that like we don't know about him that would be interesting, right? Like his childhood, for example, we actually don't know a whole lot about it. We know a little bit about his parents. We know like a little bit about his upbringing, but not as much as you would think. And even
well,
during his...
Catholic.
Yeah. Well, so he did nominally, you know, believe in Catholicism, right? Grew up in the Catholic Church. The problem with that, of course, is the intersection with that and the rest of his party's beliefs, which were very, very, shall we say, eclectic, right? Gathered from a lot of different sources and tried to reinvent sort of a pagan narrative, you know, a German heritage narrative for part of the regime. That's a whole other thing to get into. But the secret of the Nazi symbol, I think, has also been something that's been talked about. I don't know if there's a definitive answer as to the specifics besides that it was perceived as an Aryan symbol, right? So there's the idea, the pseudo-archaeological idea, and Tara's like super excited to talk about it, I can already tell, is that Aryans were basically everywhere and did all the things. And one of the things was that they also came from India, right? And in part of that belief, that symbol was supposed to be used to depict the Aryan people. And I believe the swastika is, you know, as you talked about, means like peace, means like a specific cultural connotation that are still used to this day in many parts of Asia, that obviously is pseudo-history, right? Pseudo-archaeology. Aryans didn't really come from there in the way that Hitler described them to be. But the Nazis had this thing where they were like trying to incorporate all the cool stuff from history and make it their own lineage, which wasn't true. And so that was a basically a result of that. The symbol was picked to be part of a representation of sort of this cultural revival that the Nazis were really into, specifically the esoteric Hitlerist Nazis, which is for another day. I think I've talked about them before, but that's a whole other thing. So yeah, that's kind of the history behind that. I don't think that there's any record of him actually traveling to Tibet. I know people have talked about that, but there's rumors of him traveling all over them. So I don't think he actually went there. So, although I could be wrong, I'm not a historian. But Tara, you are so ready to go. I gotta let you go.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I am so excited.
Tara.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yeah, this is actually a question that it turns out does relate to Nazi pseudo-archaeology, so I'm so yeah. pleased that you asked. And yeah, Dan, you got it right. It is basically, as you described, the symbol was taken. It very far predated Nazis or anything like that, and it is still used today. I've lived in Asia before, and if you look on Google Maps on your phone, the locations of Buddhist temples will oftentimes be marked with that symbol on the Google Maps. And I've been walking around with other people who are, you know, Europeans or Americans looking at the map, and they've seen that and been suddenly offended and gone, why is there a Nazi symbol on top of this temple?
Yeah,
because that's what we all remember it as. It's basically one of the really egregious cases of cultural appropriation where they took a symbol that did not mean anything to do with racism and eugenics or anything, and, you know, made that kind of their brand. and basically stole that symbol. And that's what we remember it as. But no, that wasn't what that symbol had anything to do with originally. And in fact, one of the big offenders with the Nazi pseudo-archaeology was actually Heinrich Himmler. Yes. He was real big into this stuff. And he did a commission and I think went in person on a few of these expeditions that were intended, as Dan described, to basically go forth and find evidence that the Germans were the master superior race. And they were doing all kinds of silly stuff. They were out looking for Atlantis and, you know, everything else. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did was appropriate the symbol because Aryan used to, and actually still does, refer to the a language family, the Indo-European language family in linguistics that is kind of the origin of many of the European languages. And it was never meant to refer to an ethnicity or a race or anything like that. That is just complete nonsense that got picked up by these pseudo-archaeologists, and they just started running with it because they were basically paid to go out and construct a narrative of Germans as the master race. And they were out doing all sorts of pseudo-archaeology. And one of the symbols that they found was the symbol which they associated with the Aryans because it was, you know, they're thinking of this Indo-European language history, and somehow seized upon this symbol that became very popular and were then using it as, you know, this emblem of the now made up term Aryan race that they were positing was kind of like the origin of civilization and was more advanced than everyone else. And this is our German heritage. It was basically an effort to rehabilitate German nationality after World War One and the humiliating defeat and everything after that. And of course got picked up by the National Socialist Party. And
So, and just to be clear, I don't know if I made that clear earlier, the Indo-Aryan peoples are a real people, right? Like they do exist. The racial category was actually first introduced by a French writer and then picked up by the Nazis. The Nazis just love like just taking random bits of fiction and reality and turning it into their own narratives. But the symbol itself, Hitler was probably not the designer of it, right? Like it was being used before he went to power and was part of the symbol ideology. I don't actually know who invented it, but it was definitely around before Hitler was like as involved. So
long before. Yeah, prehistoric, basically.
Well, I mean in the Nazi context, right? Oh. I'm pretty sure you can find instances of earlier, you know, Nazi writers and stuff using that to identify the party before Hitler was obviously a leader.
Yes, and in fact, it was floating around. I don't know of him going to Tibet, but it was, yes, that symbol was floating around in like popular culture of the time before it became kind of solidified as, you know, the symbol that Nazis were using. And then, you know, obviously other people,
you know, the Black Hebrew. You know, the Black Hebrew Israelites that are like, oh, all Black people are actually descendants of are the real Jewish people, or the people who are like, in the Mormonism that are like, oh, all the Native Americans are actually Jewish people. It's exactly like that. The Nazis were like, oh, we're all actually Indo-Aryans, right? Or Aryans. They didn't say Indo-Aryans. That's a more accurate academic term. They just called themselves Aryans because they thought they were the descendants of this race of people, even though it's actually a multitude of different people. But Nazis were not very good at their history. No,
they were very bad at archaeology as well.
Yeah. So there you go, Susie. I got to talk about fucking Hitler. I don't know if I've ever done that to a bunch of men on this show. Does that answer your question?
So there's no evidence that he ever went to Tibet or India and saw that symbol and latched onto it?
No, because I don't believe there is, because again, I think that symbol was being used before Hitler even got involved in the Nazi party. This is hearsay. But I should point out that there's been rumors about Hitler going everywhere in the world to get all kinds of ideas. And I think this is just one of those rumors. I don't think there's any backing to it, to my knowledge, but.
Yeah. I just want to jump in. I don't know. I am also not a Hitler historian. Y'all heard me earlier refer to this time period as the Nazi times. So, you know, clearly my knowledge is limited in this area, but my understanding as far as like the archaeology piece of it goes is I don't know of Hitler going to Tibet, but Nazi archaeologists were out in the world going on archaeological digs and things. They were going throughout the Mediterranean and the Near East, and they were digging things up and they were seeing these symbols. And yes, that is part of, you know, they were recognizing that that was where this was from, and they were associating it with this idea of the Aryan race that they kind of conflated with the origins of the sort of Indo-European languages or the Indo-Aryan sort of linguistic family. And yes, they were seeing these symbols as far as we know. And this did predate the Nazi Party. It was, you know, German archaeologists in, you know, the 1920s and the 1930s. Both of y'all are correct. My knowledge. Yeah, Hitler did not do that, but Nazi and German archaeologists were going out digging things up, and they did notice the symbol and kind of seize upon it.
Yeah.
Okay. And Aryan race just means white, blue-eyed blondes. Am I wrong on that?
Aryan race is not a thing. Aryan race is an idea that wasn't invented, literally was not invented until the Nazis. The Indo-Aryan people represent a broad community of people that migrated from Central Asia to the northern Indian subcontinent, right? So that's partly why they use that symbol, is because it comes from that region of the world, right? It never was used as a word to describe a race of people until, I can't remember his name, but some French writer that kind of came up with it, and then they kind of made a pseudo history that, oh, this is what it means to be an Aryan, is a blonde haired, white, blue eyed person, right? But even then, if you can look at the history of the use of the word Aryan, and there are Nazis that disagree on exactly what Aryan means, because it's just made up. It's a made up social construct. There are some people that say that this counts as Aryan, others don't count, and what actually qualifies. So it's all made up. It's whatever you want it to be, really.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It is made up to the same extent that, you know, pretty much all racial categories are made up. They are all social constructs. And yeah, that one was specifically, you know, basically made up by the Nazis to promote this idea that they were the master race. There's nothing factual behind it whatsoever. It is not a thing, but it was certainly meaningful to them, but it was a made up story, and it's a made up category. There is no Aryan race that exists in any biological sense or anything like that.
I feel like he stole the symbol, and then when people 100%. See it in Buddhism cloths or anything, they freak out, you know.
Yes, absolutely. That is correct. Yeah, it was absolutely cultural appropriation, and it's really sad that now we all see that when it's a Buddhist symbol and we think of Nazis, and yes, they stole it and appropriated it and associated it with their agenda to be racist.
Yep. So anything else you want to add, Susie, before we let you go?
No, thank you. I like I said, I caught you late, and I just heard about some of the Nazis in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that's right in my mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you have a good night. I'm surprised. Well, I guess I got to start making it. I don't know. We never talked about Hitler on here, and I'm surprised he hasn't come up more often. There's a thing I've been wanting to talk about, Kara, for a long time, which is something called esoteric Hitlerism. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I've mentioned it before. I've talked about this with secular rarity and some other stuff, but like when this is interesting because it kind of ties into the other call. It is the literal belief of people being able to contact the astral plane, including like Hitler and other stuff, but it's actually even more than it's a wide collection of new age and mysticism ideas combined with like Nazi ideology, and it's very weird, but also probably a good topic for the show, so maybe that's another Dan's deep dive. But esoteric Hitlerism is not like a weird Tumblr phrase. That's like a that's an academic term, which, you know,
of course it is. It's esoteric.
Yeah, exactly. it sounds made up. It sounds like a thing, like a joke on a television, but it's not. It's a real phrase. But anyway, I have some quick announcements I need to make. I just want to let you guys know about ways you can contact me and the other people that do this show. You can email us. It's truth@atheist-community.org. You can also reach out to the ACA by doing tv@atheist-community.org and see what's going on our website. And that's atheist-community.org. Of course, I like reading emails. I always try to respond to stuff that gets sent to me. So that's a great place to talk to me if you want my opinion on stuff. Or you can, you know, fall into the show too. And that's always welcome. There's also a Facebook group that I want to let you guys know about. It's run by fans and just for fans. So you can go to that by going to tiny.cc/FBTWG, and you can interact with other fans and you want to talk to them. So it's pretty cool. You should definitely check that out. Also, really quickly, something I skipped earlier was that we we have a merch store, and you should definitely check out that merch store if you haven't already. We have all kinds of stuff. We got the hoodies, t-shirts, and hats, and this is something I'm excited to talk about. This is a design that I pitched, and then Greg, our executive producer, came up with and put together. It's probably one of my favorite shirts we've ever done. I'm not going to lie. It says, lizard people are people too, and it has a lizard person giving a thumbs up, and I like that shirt. I just think it's neat. So if you're watching the show, you should definitely look at it. If you're listening to the show, please look up the shirt, because I think it's a good shirt. And check out all the other merch that we have in the store as well. So yeah, we're doing a shirt that only lasts for the month. So that is our shirt for this month. Be sure to get it while September lasts. And yeah, definitely keep that shirt, because I love it. I just think
I love that shirt too. I am literally ordering that shirt right now as we speak. That is excellent.
I like it. I like it. I think it's good. One more thing I got to mention as well. Maybe two more things. We'll see. But this show has a fundraiser that you can donate to. If you want to do that, you can click that little donate button that's on YouTube if you're watching it there. And the ACA is a nonprofit, which means if you donate there, 100% of the money goes to the ACA. YouTube does not get a cut of that. So please consider donating and doing that there as well. If you want to become a member on the channel, you can do that by hitting that join button, and then you get cool little emoticons that tell you that you're a cool exclusive member. You can do that for as little as 99 cents a month. So you should definitely check that out. One last thing I got to plug, okay? And that is supporting us through Amazon. If you want to be lazy and support us, and you feel like I can't contribute a single cent to the ACA because I just don't care, well, I got some news for you. If you want to support us through Amazon Smile, you can do that. All you have to do is designate us as your selected charity. You go to tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA and select that, and you can make us your select charity. So part of the money that you pay for a product on Amazon goes to us. So that's another way you can support. So anyway, okay, done with the plugs for right now. Let's go ahead and take on our next caller, shall we? We got Heath calling in from Canada. Heath, how's it going?
Hi, not too bad. How are you?
Doing all right, Heath. We talked about Christianity and talking to dead people and Hitler. So, you know, just another episode of Truth Wanted, right? How can I help you?
Well, I listened to all your shows, and this seemed like the right one to call in about this. It was when I was very young, I witnessed a rain of frogs on a family camping trip. I was seeing a lot of fantastic stuff at that time, killer whales and dolphins, all sorts of stuff. So I kind of like took it as another amazing thing that I was seeing. Didn't think a lot of it, really, until later on when I heard someone say, oh, I don't believe in Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or rain of frogs. And I was like, oh.
I sometimes think, you know, is this show gonna get stale? Am I just gonna ever hear the same things every week? And now I'm talking to a man from Canada about his sighting of a rain of frogs, and you know what I've decided? It is I will never expect what happens on this show. Rain of frogs, that is awesome. So here's the thing about rain of frogs. This may surprise you, but I do know a little bit about rain of frogs phenomenon. It's actually kind of a thing. It dates back to the Bible, right? If you remember in, I believe it's Exodus where it happens. Yes. Moses is talking to the Pharaoh there, and there's supposed to be these plagues that go upon Egypt. One of them is a rain of frogs, right? So that happens. So that's so specific enough to where you think there must be an origin for this, right? In nature, and there kind of is. So in low pressure environments, right? Tornadoes can happen, but also just like water spouts in general, right? Can come up. And frogs are not that heavy. They're just a few ounces, and they can be lifted up by these events and kind of sort of rain down on people. Now, when we say rain, we think of like, oh, it's like coming from the sky, right? And that's not really usually what's happening in this, but this is so long ago, I'm surprised I can even recall some of this. But like, there have been sightings of these kinds of situations before. And like, this is the proposed explanation for what's been going on, is that it's just, again, there's usually a storm happening. And when that, in that low pressure, you create sort of that environment for stuff to get picked up, including frogs. So I'm assuming that's what happened to you. But Heath, I'm just spitballing here, because I just had a man on the phone tell me that he saw a rain of frogs, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. So that's my best stab at it. What do you think?
I guess that's what I kind of assumed at the time, or that they were coming out of the trees, because we were in the rainforest, and we were trying to launch our boat, because that was how we did our camping trips. My dad is a boat builder, and we had a 14-foot skiff that we would camp from. And he'd seen this, what looked like a lake on the map. And when we got there, it was a swamp. So we were right next to a swamp and in a rainforest. So I guess all of the elements were there. I mean, the frogs were close by.
Yeah. I mean, where are you going to find frogs if not a rainforest, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I also kind of, in my 20s, after a long bout of drinking, had kind of a religious epiphany, or at least what some people would call it, if you don't mind me changing the subject a bit.
Okay. I guess we've explored everything we could about a rain of frogs. I can't emphasize this enough. We just talked about a sign of a rain of frogs, and that I think that's just a milestone. I have to point that out. I was raised atheist,
so I had never heard of the rain of frogs at that point in my life. So
yeah, I think it was a plague of frogs in the Bible, but they were raining down.
But they were raining down, right? That's the description, right? So I assume somebody at some time saw that happen and they wrote it down. I don't know.
You know, it must have been Moses, when he wrote Exodus. Oh,
definitely. Definitely Moses. Yeah. Definitely Moses. Yeah. But anyway, Heath, don't let us interrupt you. You were talking about your religious epiphany.
Well, yeah, or what some people would call it. Raised as an atheist, I saw it differently. But it was a week-long camping trip with about 5,000 people at this 30-year anniversary of this medieval society that I was hanging around with at the time. And our little group was considered the place to go to kind of have a party. So what we wound up having was like a 7-day-long party. And at the end of this, we were just exhausted and had been low on sleep and low on food and drinking too much. And a friend of mine stayed up all night. And as the sun came up and the sun hit my eyes, I got this overwhelming feeling of joy and couldn't stop giggling and laughing. And it happened to a friend of mine sitting next to me. And I could cut it off by putting my hand between the sun and my eyes, and then it would stop. And then if I lifted it up, it would continue again. And my first thought was, wow, I've got a direct switch to my endorphins. This is wild. And then I thought, I guess that this is what people would see as a religious epiphany if they were, you know, magically minded. And I thought that was pretty fascinating, too.
It is. Jakar, what do you think?
Well, you know, that is interesting. I think, if I'm hearing you correctly, that may not be something that you took as a religious epiphany. Is that correct?
Right.
No. I just thought it was interesting that if I was raised in a different way, that I probably would have.
Oh, yeah.
Size a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. It's kind of one of those things. No, go ahead.
I've always wondered how people could believe in God. Because when I was about eight, the subject came up and I said, well, we're all atheists in this family. And my mom said, no, your dad is a Christian. He was raised Christian. We just raised you atheists so you could choose for yourself. And I went, oh, so it's like 5 against 1. That's not fair. And so I really tried to believe in God so that it would be 2 against 4, a little more even. And I just couldn't do it. And ever since then, I've been fascinated by how that happened. So that was why I thought it was interesting. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting. And I think that's a really good empathetic kind of response that you did there, trying to think, okay, I can see how someone else coming from a different background, a different mindset would interpret this experience some other way, because it's a very strange experience. So I do think that's interesting. And that you recognize that as something that someone else might think of as a spiritual experience. But, you know, in fact, that wasn't your interpretation of it. And I don't know what that was. I know there is something to, like, for some people, looking at the sun can make them sneeze.
That's exactly what I was
involuntarily. Yep. Yeah. Sorry to steal your thunder there. You know, there is some potential, you know, mechanism there that we can kind of, you know, imagine that could explain that, you know, other than a supernatural response. But yeah, I don't know, Dan, if you have more on the photic sneeze.
Well,
response.
There's a very famous miracle. It's one of Catholics today will bring this up, right? It's the miracle of the sun. Now, my details are a bit fuzzy, but I believe it was in a South American country that happened in the early 20th century. I want to believe a bunch of people stared at the sun for a long time and thought that they saw the Virgin Mary, right? And this was a big group of people. And so that's why Catholics talk about this, because it wasn't just, you know, one person saying this. It was, you know, a bunch of individuals kind of seeing this thing. And the moral of the story is, when you stare at the sun, you see weird stuff. Like, anytime you see like that in your field of vision, like, it's going to kind of fuck you up a little bit. I don't know. Like, I, That's really the only conclusion I can come to with that. I mean, obviously, when you read a story like that, for us atheists, it's not as fascinating. It's like, yeah, they saw stuff because they messed up their vision for like a second. Like that there's a very clear cause and effect thing happening. But for Catholics, like, oh no, this is a group of people all reporting the same thing. Why would they say that? It's like, well, obviously there's cultural influences. Really, culture is the language, but in the lens by which we interpret our events, right? So if you're growing up around Catholicism and you're growing up around these ideas and what's important, like you might interpret your experiences through that lens. That's certainly how I interpreted some of my experiences growing up as a Christian, thinking I prayed to do good on a test, and I did good on a test, and I thought that was God helping me. Like that's, it sounds very simple and asinine, but that's really how human beings think, you know. So it is interesting that there's a precedent there, right, as far as the sun is concerned.
Also, do not look directly at the sun.
Yeah, don't
look at the sun.
Yes,
it's not
don't
good.
Do it. Heath, go ahead.
It happened to my buddy at the same time next to me, which it kind of parallels what you were talking about with that kind of group hysteria. So that's kind of interesting. Anyways, I should let the next call go. I think I'm done here.
Oh, well, we appreciate it, Heath. Thanks so much for calling in and sharing two stories. Again, have to emphasize, Reign of Frogs, okay? More than just the Bible tale. It's a thing. I can't remember when I first learned about that. I think it was like during my deconstruction, and I was like going through every part. I think I had like the Skeptics Annotated Bible, which don't cite the Skeptics Annotated Bible. It's like wrong half the time, but it is kind of funny. And I believe that's where I first learned about the frogs thing. Like there was a link on there or a comment about that or something. And I was like, what the heck? Like that's out of all the things, like that might have been a real thing that could have happened. I don't know. But obviously, I don't know. I think that's horrid.
No. Yeah. I've got a lot of issues with that story, and parts of it may be stolen from other stories. But yeah, I think I saw that in a movie one time. Was it Magnolia, where it ends with a rain of frogs happening? I don't recall.
I don't know. But Cara, I think, you know, we're at the end of the show. I'm going to do something that I haven't done before, which I think I'm going to do a Dan's deep dive at the end. I have like a small one paired, and you know, I'm too excited to talk about it. So maybe this is a good way to end the show. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. I want to make it a more regular feature. So I want to do this, and you're smiling because you already know what I'm going to talk about. So let's see if we can just shove this in the next like 10 minutes before the show ends. Okay. But you down for this?
Yes, I am so down. This is okay. Today is the first day I've heard of this. So So
you're familiar with the character Severus Snape, right?
Uh-huh.
Who is Severus Snape? Can you briefly describe?
Yeah, so he's the professor played by Alan Rickman, who is amazing, mm-hmm. in the Harry Potter series, who
right.
is, you know, kind of the adversarial figure for much of the series, is very mean to Harry Potter, and then, of course, I assume spoilers are okay here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he turns out...
It's been like a decade. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's good. If you haven't seen the end, that's on you, or read it, that's on you. But in the end, you know, of course, it turns out that he's kind of vindicated, and we get to know his backstory, and he was in love with Harry's mother, and, you know, everyone was very mean to him, and, you know, been protecting Harry all along, and, you know, is really one of the good guys. But he's right. very unpleasant.
There's a lot of, you know, I wasn't going to get into this part, but there's a lot of modern discourse on the, shall we say, efficacy of Severus Snape, whether or not he is a tragic character or just an incel. That's a whole other debate, right? A lot of takes on that. But that's not what I'm here to talk about, Carl. I'm here to talk about a very specific subsection of the Harry Potter fandom. Now, the Harry Potter fandom is interesting because fandoms are very popular online, right? There's fandoms for every kind of show you can think of. Harry Potter was very early in its adoption on the internet. There's people who talk about being in chat rooms and dedicated fan sites, you know, way back in the 90s stuff, right, about this. And a lot of it was adult, right? Like, adults were the ones who were using the internet back then. It wasn't really kids would maybe get on sometimes to like play games and stuff, but like when it came to this content, it was very much adults that were doing it, and adults made up a big fan base of the Harry Potter series, right? So around the mid-2000s, when Snape was becoming more of a thing, right, like the books kept being written, there was a particular part of the fandom that was developing, which is now dubbed as Snape Wives. Now, let me clarify, they would not call themselves the Snape Wives, they would call themselves Snape. And when I say that this is a religion, I mean this in the sincerest way, okay? I know a lot of people talk about devotion to a fandom and compare it to a cult or a religion. This particular community has been cited by several journals of religion as a modern religious phenomenon. I think it's safe to say that this was a religion. What am I talking about? These were people who either sincerely or role-played, one of the two, depending on who it was, the belief that Severus Snape existed and existed on the astral plane, and that they could communicate with him, and also were his wife, right? Mm-hmm. So if, obviously, this is a community made of women. Particularly, what's interesting is middle-aged women, on average, more so than younger, which is you know, for fandoms, we typically think of like teenagers and stuff. This was, were adults, a lot of them married, a lot of them living their lives, who were dedicated to the Snape wife lifestyle, hashtag Snapes, right? I guess, is what they would say. I don't know, Twitter wasn't really a thing when this started, but this was a whole thing, and it was part of these online communities. Now, what makes it special is, again, they truly did believe that this was a thing, right? There were some of them that would even go as so far as to say that they were exclusively dedicated to Snape and thought that they shouldn't have marriages or relationships outside of anybody else. There's at least one story citing that they ended an engagement because they wanted to dedicate themselves to their husband, Snape, right? Now, how did they talk to Snape? You know, obviously, it depends on the practitioner. There are some specific prayers that they would make to Snape, Severus Snape, again, fictional character from the Harry Potter universe, that they would read out loud, or they would devote fan fiction to him, which also doubled as religious works. Again, oh, I'm not kidding.
I knew fan fiction was coming at some point in this.
Obviously, fan fiction's got to be a part of it, right? Sometimes it's fan fiction of the person with their relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just stories of what Severus Snape was doing in the astral plane. But this community basically saw themselves as sister wives to the character of Severus Snape, which is awesome.
Wait a minute. So they're not like jealous of each other. They all recognize each other's existence and are like a community?
Yeah, there is a community aspect to this, right? Like they all recognize that they're the wives to Severus Snape. Now, there's a joke among some fandoms about people having exclusivity, like to their partner, right? But no, this was a sister wife community for the most part. I'm sure there was a jealous person here or there, but like that's how they viewed themselves. And like they influenced each other, right? Like some had some ideas for some fan fictions or some rituals or some other things that they would use for themselves. You know, it was very much an ongoing development. There's even some pictures of shrines that people would make to Severus Snape that they would, you know, kind of do their ritual, right? So I just imagine you're presumably a guy, right? You're in middle age and you're suddenly your wife, you know, is really into Harry Potter, or maybe they're always kind of into it. And then you find out one day, like there's a Snape altar in your house. And like, you didn't know that was there, but it was like part of the hidden part. I don't know. That had to have happened at least some, right?
So I want to ask you this. If mm-hmm. that happened to you and you were dating someone who was presumably a middle-aged woman, apparently that's who's in this. And mm-hmm. one day there was the Snape shrine in your house and she explained mm-hmm. what was happening. Would you feel like you were being cheated on? What would your reaction be?
So this is another thing, right? Again, this is schisms within the Snapeist community where they had to decide, is having a relationship with somebody else that isn't Snape legitimate? And there's some that, again, believe that this, you had to be completely devoted, right? Some of them had relationships with other characters on the astral plane. For me, myself, I would say, I think that's just weird because I don't think that person is real. Honestly, I would suggest that they go to therapy. Like that's not a facetious way of me saying that. I think like if you get to a point where that's going to be your comfort and you devote that much time to it, I think there is a line. It's a fine line. I can't tell you exactly where it is. We all have our comforts. A lot of us write fan fiction and are perfectly normal people. And that's not me, but you know, I don't write fan fiction, but like, you know, I know people that do. And it's just, but like, at what point does that devotion become, you know, unhealthy? And maybe it's when you start writing prayer. So I'm going to read a prayer to you real quick.
Yes, please. Do I need to like bow my head or close my eyes? No, you don't need to bow
your head. It's more just, I want to demonstrate that there's another element to this community, which is like, they're very misogynist. Like they very much have these traditional ideas of Christianity that's even built into this like sister wife relationship with Severus Snape, which is,
I knew that was coming, and yeah. I'll tell you why in a minute.
Well, it's very bizarre. So here it is, okay? I'm just reading this verbatim. This was copied off of a website, okay? See if I get the whole thing. It says, I promise to be always faithful in body and mind and never love another man. I promise to love and cherish you all of my life. I promise to respect and honor you all of my life. I promise to dedicate all of my life to you. I promise to stand by you in good times and bad times. I promise to protect and guard you and to prevent you from any harm. I promise to provide anything you need for you. I promise to take the best care of you. I promise to use your name with the respect it deserves. I promise to always wear the ring with your name on it as a symbol of my love. I promise to obey you no matter what. I promise to respect your wishes and not to be selfish. I promise to look after you in sickness and in health. I solemnly promise all of this to you, Severus Snape, my only love. May these words create a strong, loving bond which can only be broken by death. If I break the promises made or treat you not in the manner I should be, I'll make sure I'll die. May all the good forces and spirits bless our love eternally, so it will be done. So again, that's a vow written
well,
by...
Well, that took a turn at the end there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was real serious to start with, but then that bit at the end about if I don't treat you in the way that I should, which I want to point out, is an incredibly vague and suggestive statement. Yeah. I mean, subjective statement. Then I promise to die. What was it? Like, I'll make sure I die.
If I break the promises made or treat you not in the manner I should be, I'll make sure I'll die is what that says. So yeah, I mean, like this is somebody who's saying Severus Snape can do whatever they want with me in my body. Like literally that's what they're saying. And if they're not pleasing that this character, like this is fundamentalist Christianity, right? Like this it's weird.
Yes. And this is okay. That's exactly what I was thinking too. And this reminds me very much of the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing, which was, I guess, probably around the same time frame. That also, if I'm correct about this, I think it grew out of a Twilight fanfic that was based on the characters from that, which was also basically modeling a very unhealthy and abusive relationship in which the women were subservient and, you know, sort of beholden to this monster/ supernatural / possibly being conflated with God figure. Exactly what the Bible kind of teaches. I mean, I don't want to get into purity culture, but you get a ring that says you're engaged to Jesus, you know, until you get married. And this sounds familiar.
It's familiar, and it also gets worse. Like, if I haven't even gotten to, I mean, like, obviously this is bad, right? But there's even more. Okay.
What? So,
listen, obviously, you're maybe interested in this phenomenon. You try to get yourself on the astral plane with Severus Snape. You try to visit him. Sometimes they have to try to contact him in different ways because there's some people who are trying this out and it's not really working, right? So there's different ways in which they do it. One of the ways that they do it is they might wear sexy underwear to bed in the hopes that Severus Snape would visit them in a dream. They also thought that maybe Severus Snape wasn't visiting you because you weren't pure enough. Maybe you had an ugliness in your heart. Maybe you were gossiping to your friends, or maybe you were doing something that was displeasing to him. So there's a little bit of this kind of behavioral changing, right? And this is the part where I'm like, okay, this is the reason why I want to talk about this, right? Because there's all kinds of people that have weird devotions. This is like cult level, right? Like when you are not only, you know, obviously making these prayers and making these very significant changes to your life, like I think that's where it becomes a problem, right? And maybe becomes more of an unhealthy fixation. Now, I'm not bringing this up because I want to necessarily insult this community. They're not really a thing anymore as far as I know. I haven't been able to find any modern sites that talk about them in any like legitimate capacity, only as a kind of historical sort of retrospect. But like,
I love that we're talking about the 2000s as a historical retrospect.
Yeah, which is great. But also, like, I'm bringing this out because this can happen to anyone at anywhere at any time, right? We often think about mythology as a thing in the past. Mythology is a constant process, right? Stories and ideas of how we interpret and worship continue to develop all the time. So it's a thing that's happening all the time. So anyway, we're really at the end of the show, so I got to wrap things up. One other thing I really want to point out here is there was even more schisms within the community as to whether or not J.K. Rowling actually knew Severus Snape, right? So you have to wonder, okay, well, they know that there's an author writings, right? So like, what's the deal? How do you reconcile it? The idea, or at least some of the ideas, go like this. The Bible, right, may not be the perfect word of God, but it was inspired by God, right? But we know it was ultimately written by man. That's kind of how they feel about J.K. Rowling. They think that J.K. Rowling was inspired by the spirit of Severus Snape and wrote out all this stuff and wrote about the character. But J.K. Rowling is flawed, and boy, is she ever flawed now. But, you know, even then, she was flawed, right? And may not have the perfect interpretation of Snape. So there's literally people who have their own ideas of who Snape even is outside of the canon of the books, right? So it goes even beyond this idea of we're talking about this fictional character. Now it's just a character that you get to make up with whatever characteristics you want at that point. So
yeah, which I'm almost more comfortable with that last part, where it's just, that sounds like, you know, the fan fiction that I'm familiar with, where somebody just gets inspired by a character in a show and runs with it. And okay, you know, all right, that's fine. But this business where they're getting married to him in their mind and threatening death, if he becomes displeased with them and he is not a person that is, you know, necessarily visible to anyone else, that is very concerning to me. And it sounds extremely dangerous for people. I'm glad to hear that that's not something that's still going on.
Yeah,
because
basically,
I am now concerned for people that are getting roped into this.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, a lot of this was headed by a purported user on LiveJournal at the time. And one of the reasons why this isn't a thing anymore is because that particular user actually ended up falling in love with other characters on the astral plane. And this person was kind of like the Pope in this community, who was a leader in this. And so a lot of people just stopped doing it. It just kind of fizzled out because their leader was like, at least, you know, one of their leaders just wasn't as into it anymore. So... that's why I know it's the whole thing. That's why you don't hear about it as much today. But again, I'm getting the call from the crew to kind of wrap things up. So I just want to read off one more quote to kind of summarize this story and what I think the mentality was. This was somebody, obviously, you know, this is getting picked up in the Harry Potter fandom, right? People are kind of making fun of this. They're joking about it. And they're wondering what to make of this. And people are mad about this. It's like, this is basically like when you tell a Christian that God isn't real or God is bad, right? There's a defensive response there. So this is a quote from somebody who I guess was making a prayer to Severus Snape and said, "I'm so sorry that these fans even dare your name. Obviously, this one is not loyal or even trying to understand what makes you you. I feel ashamed some speak like this about you, as I feel you deserve better. Please note there are fans that do accept you as you are, and not all find more negative sides to you than positive ones. I felt tempted to react, but as I don't want to start another war, and as you would probably fandom war, obviously not like real war, right? And as you would probably tell me to put my energy in things that do matter, I decided to place my reaction to this insanity here. I feel disgusted by this, as you probably would too. Severus, all I can say is that to me, all of this rubbish is just what it looked like. Rubbish and lies. To me, you are perfect the way you are. The flaws mentioned are not flaws as such, but merely fantasy made up by the writer, and for the other part, just characteristics, the ones some claim to like, but in fact don't have a clue as to understanding why you are as you are. I do, as you know, I share many of your flaws, which kept us alive with our noses up all these harsh years. Be well, Severus, and know I will always be right beside you, loving and loyal, no matter what happens." And again, I think that's beautiful if it wasn't for the fact that we're talking about a character from the Harry Potter universe, right? And so like,
yeah. Yeah, this reminds me a lot of around that same time period when people were going on dates with Jesus, where they were basically just, you know, going places by themselves and then journaling about it, or, you know, having a prayer about it, where I guess I can see how people might find some kind of benefit just from the journaling aspect of it or something, but wow, that is quite an elaborate set of ideas to be running around with.
I think there's sincerity there, right? I mean, like, obviously there's a bit of role play involved, like any room, right? There's roles that you play in a community in a performance, but like, I don't know. There's enough people there to make me think that at least some of them really thought that this was for real, because that's a long time to dedicate. I mean, this went on for years, right? So it doesn't happen anymore. Again, the creator met some other dudes on the astral plane, and it stopped being a thing. But like, you know, this, I just wanted to bring this up, and I thought this was interesting for the show. One, because it is funny. Like, it is humorous, right? I'm a human being, and I think that that's funny, but also because like this really can happen to anybody who has like vested interest in particular places and ideas, and also finds community in something, right? Like, this was a community of sister wives that all found comfort in each other despite other people mocking them for their beliefs, and that, if anything, probably emboldened their belief in some.
I completely agree. This is reminiscent of a lot of the themes, you know, that we see in, you know, some of these same, you know, Christian and other religious traditions. And I'm actually laughing not at the belief system so much as the person that ran off with the other characters.
I'm the opposite. I will laugh at this belief system all day. I don't really want to laugh at these people because, again, I believe that a Jewish carpenter 2,000 years ago died and was the son of God and saved me from my sins, right? Like, in theory, that's just as wild. Like, it doesn't make any more logical sense. But
no, not at all. Yeah. It is no more ridiculous that people are writing prayers to this imaginary person in the astral plane than some other imaginary person in the astral plane. I just, the end of it, just, it, that wasn't the direction I thought that was going to go.
Right. Well, we're out of time now, and I'm way, way over, so we got to wrap things up. Carr, thanks so much for being on the show today. This is where I get to ask you where people can find you at.
Oh, yeah. Great question. So I can be found at, well, where can I be found at? You can email me at kara.griffin@atheist-commie.org. Or you can find me on the Facebooks, although I am rarely on there. So don't message me there. I probably won't answer, although I am on there. You can find me if you want, Kara Griffin. And I'm also on Discord. Let me get my name for you. Can you tell that I am a user of the social medias? I'm very good at this.
Very good. Very good at that. While you're doing that, I want to thank the wonderful, fantastic crew that helps make this show happen every single week. And if we can get a quick shot of the crew cam, that'd be awesome. Look at that crew. And they're all holding up. Is it embarrassing that I don't know who that is?
It's Alan Rickman.
That's Alan Rickman. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's Everest Snape. All right. He had the gray hair in the movies. I'm used to seeing, you know, the long black hair. But anyway, rest in peace, Alan Rickman. I wonder what you would have thought about this whole. But anyway, you got that social media?
Yes, I am on the Discord. You can find me. I'm in the ACD Discord as well. I'm Kara G. So look for me in there. You'll see me and friend me, or however we do that on the Discord. I'm sorry, I'm really bad at the social media. I'm quite old.
I look, social media, I think about quitting all of my social media more and more. It really gets to that point. But hey, you can still find me on Twitter at Objectively Dan until I decide to deactivate that account forever. Thanks again to everybody that helped make this show happen. Thanks again to the crew, and thanks again to the patrons and everybody who donates in all the different capacities. Before we go, Carl, what's your words of wisdom? Do you have any words of wisdom for us?
Ooh, you know what? You mentioned that you were going to ask me that, and then it dropped out of my mind. So, you know, the thing that comes to mind is just kind of thinking back on what we were just saying about, you know, giving people some slack for believing silly things, because you've all done that, is dignity and respect. It costs you nothing to give that to people, and it can mean everything to them. So please treat people with dignity.
Yes, please treat people with dignity, respect as best you can. And that is going to be it for everything tonight, folks. I am Objectively Dan, and as always, remember to keep wanting, and I'll see you next.
Watch The Nonprofits and join the hosts in the live chat Sundays at 3 p.m. Central between The Atheist Experience and Talk Hidden. Visit tiny.cc/ytnp.